Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 131 of the Gunblog Variety Cast, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
I am doing great, Sean, and I have a lot of big news to share with people. Now, first of all, and listeners, this is the first Sean is going to hear of it too, so his reaction is going to be genuine. I would like to announce that I have joined Florida Carry as their diversity outreach coordinator.
All right.
I was approached by the head of Florida Carry, Sean Carana. So now I'm going to be working with two Seans. Essentially, as diversity outreach coordinator, I'm basically going to be using the resources of Florida Carry to help promote Operation Blazing Sword. And I can do it with state-level resources. This helps my organization, so it's good for me. It will hopefully bring in more diverse elements in the LGBTQ community into Florida Carry. So it's a win for everyone.
Excellent.
Oh, and by the way, as a member of Florida Carry, they're going to send me to Gun Rights Policy Conference in Dallas.
Oh,
so,
good.
You know, regardless of what happens with 10K for 2A, I'm going, baby.
Yep. And see, since you're never going to make the money for 10K for 2A, you're never going to raise it. I mean, like, it's just not going to happen. So it's probably best that you found some other way to get there.
We'll see. Now, in related but far less dramatic news, I'm also going to be a guest speaker for Maryland Shell Issue on March 4th. And the meeting is at the Elks Club of Annapolis. That's 2 Pythian Drive in Edgewater, Maryland.
Stop by and say hi.
And the meeting starts at 1 p.m. with my presentation beginning around 1:30. There's no cost to attend, even if you aren't a member of MSI. And the topic of my speech will, of course, be Operation Blazing Sword. And after that, there's going to be a short question and answer session. So I hope to see you there. So Sean, how's your mom doing this week? And how are you?
Mom's doing fine. I talked to her yesterday on the phone. She sounds really strong. Not really a whole lot to report, but, you know, she sounds good, and I'm glad to hear.
Well, great news. Now, do you have anything personal to report?
Personal to report. Well, I'm married. No. I did a couple of things last weekend. I went to Grassroots North Carolina's annual meeting. That was a good time. Problem I'm having with it is there were not enough of you people there. I know we've got listeners in North Carolina. I know we've got listeners who are gun people in North Carolina. Where were you? If you're not a member of Grassroots North Carolina, then you need to be a member of Grassroots North Carolina. And if you are a member of Grassroots North Carolina, when these things come up, you want to be there. There were presentations on a number of topics, one of which was legislative tactics, which is always worth the price of admission. It's interesting that our legislature doesn't work the way we think it works. You know, we've all watched I'm Just a Bill. You know, that stupid song where the bill makes its way through Congress.
Mm-hmm. Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot more to it than that. Convincing legislators to do your bidding is always entertaining. And Paul Vallone, the president of Grassroots North Carolina, gave a presentation on how we do it. So you would have liked to have seen it. Maybe you should be there next year. Now, that was Sunday. On Saturday, I went out and shot my second IDPA match with my new gun, and it was the first time I've ever shot IDPA outdoors. And let me tell you, it was a whole lot more elaborate. I shot the IDPA match at H2O Fowl Farms, which is, I don't know, it's about 45 minutes from here. I've never been there before, and I didn't know what to expect. It was this series of berms, essentially, in the middle of a field. I always thought, you know, if you're going to do a pistol range or a rifle range, you kind of have to put it up against a hill or something. This was in the middle of a field, and they just raised berms. They had 5 bays that went along the length of a, like, I guess a 200-yard rifle range, and then they used the end of the rifle range as bay number 6, and we had 6 stages. The first stage I shot, which was stage 2, they say, all right, Sean, load your gun. Now put it in the glove compartment of this minivan. Now sit in the passenger seat, and on the go signal, you're going to grab the gun, you're going to stick it out the passenger window one-handed and shoot each of these two targets three times. Now you're going to shoot across the minivan through the open driver's window and shoot that other target over there three times. Then get out, and you've got three targets you got to shoot twice, and one target you have to shoot three times, and that one's farthest away, so you have to shoot it last. I'm like, okay, how exactly do you shoot from inside a minivan? Amazingly enough, I didn't put any extra bullet holes in the minivan. I went right through the window. I mean, like, the passenger side's easy. Your arm's sticking out of it. But reaching across and shooting out the driver's window, you know, I've never done that before. It was a lot of fun. Stage four, they said, okay, sit here on this bench. Now we're going to handcuff your hands together. Now you're going to shoot the stage.
Bow, chicka, wow, wow, chicka, bow, bow, bow.
Yeah, okay. Well, the scenario was basically I'm captured and the guard leaves his gun and walks away and I jump up and grab the gun and shoot all of the terrorists.
I'm assuming there wasn't a reload involved.
You have any idea how hard it is to reload with your hands handcuffed together?
Well, that's why I asked. That's why I figured there wasn't one, because that would be a pain, man.
What they did to promote safety was is the reload was sitting on the barrel next to the gun, and you couldn't pick it up and put it in your mag carrier because your hands are handcuffed together. So in order to get it, you'd have to basically point the gun at your toes or who knows where reaching for the reload. So you had to shoot the targets, run back to the barrel, put the magazine in. Of course, this is one of those cases where you really shouldn't slingshot the slide. You should just push the slide release lever. But, you know, what's ingrained in my head is to slingshot the gun, right? And I'm like fighting with it, trying to get it. Ugh, what a pain. The worst, however, was at the end of every stage, you have to unload and show clear. Dump the magazine. And now I'm trying to lock the slide to the rear with hands that are handcuffed together. So I'm like, oh, God, it was comical. It turns out, though, that that stage, I shot it 16th out of 72 in my division, which was the stock service pistol division, which is basically a bone stock gun. And I shot it, I think it was like 22 or 24 out of 101 overall. So I did particularly well on that stage, or everybody else did particularly badly.
So what you're saying is that you're proficient at operating mechanisms while in handcuffs.
I can operate in operational operations with handcuffs on. Yes, that's correct.
Ooh.
So overall, 43rd out of 101, and in my division, which I said was SSP, stock service pistol, I was 27th out of 72. So I did pretty good.
Okay.
And now we got voicemail. Friend of the show, David Phillips, sent us some voicemail about one of the plugs of the week we did. We plugged Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries as a cool TV show on Netflix that had, you know, a little something for everyone.
Hello, Sean and Aaron. This is David Phillips. Thanks for the recommendation of Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. My wife and I are watching the second season now and thoroughly enjoy it. The dialogue, the costumes, and characterizations are all wonderful. Keep up the good work on the podcast. Yours is one that I never miss. Thanks.
And by the way, David is the gentleman who bought me that bottle of St. Augustine pot distilled rum that I was just so happy about the other week. So thank you for that, David, as well.
Sweet. All right. So here is the way to become, like, the favorite fan of the show. Buy rum for Aaron and send voicemail to Sean. So if you can do either of those things, you're going to go right up to the top of our favorite fans list.
Absolutely.
Send us a voicemail if you have something to say, especially if it's, oh, you know, this is, I tried the plug of the week and it was great, or I bought the thing that you said was good and it sucked. Send us a voicemail. Pull out that handy dandy smartphone that you've got and record us a voicemail using your voice memo app. Email that to sean@seansorrentino.com. We'll probably play it on the show.
Special thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of the Gunblog Variety Cast. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at luckygunner.com.
Well, let's get on with the show.
Beth is on assignment at the Gunsight Academy where, according to her, she's doing firearms training all day, every day. She recaps her week at Gunsight.
Well, I've been doing a lot of traveling lately, and here I am once again at a hotel far, far away from home. I'm actually right now in Cleveland, Ohio, getting ready for the Firearms and Fashion Show, but I am coming off a fantastic and amazingly challenging and informative trip that I got to take with some of the team from USCCA. We went to Gunsight Academy in Arizona and took the 250 pistol class. For those of you who are wondering, the 250 class is basically a defensive pistol class, and of course, it's all based on the teachings of Colonel Jeff Cooper, who we know as the father of modern pistol craft. So basically, you're learning all the modern techniques of the pistol, you're learning about the warrior mindset, and of course, you're learning about gun handling and marksmanship. It was a fantastic week. Like I said, it was very challenging and educational. We spent maybe a couple hours here and there the first couple days in the classroom. We had some lectures about mindset, about color codes of awareness, about ballistics, and of course about what to expect from the class itself. But pretty much the rest of the week, we were outside in the high desert heat, and we were putting all of the drills and lessons and fundamentals into practice every day. Some of that even included a low-light night shoot, which was a really amazing experience. I have not really shot very much in those kinds of conditions, so it was fantastic practice just to really get used to what the firearm feels like and how to make sure you're able to press check and check for ammo without having to look at the firearm. Also using your natural point of aim and not having to depend on maybe that bright green or white dot that is the front sight. So that was a fantastic experience. Great practice, great challenge. But I think my favorite part of the week would probably be the experiences we had going through the gully where they have different steel targets set up, and also going through the shoot house where, of course, they have targets set up in a scenario format. For me, that was just, I guess it was just really eye-opening. I have definitely made the decision to work on firearms and train with firearms and learn as much as I can because I think it's imperative that I am able to have the tools and the knowledge to be able to protect myself and my family, especially my children. But I've never been put in that kind of scenario before where I actually have to go through a house as if this were mine. I'm coming home late at night, they set up the scenario and they say, your family members need help. And you have to use all the techniques that you have learned as far as, you know, how to scan and assess, of course, all the fundamentals of shooting, and put those into practice in that scenario-based setting where they have targets that look like real people. I mean, not just blobs, not just humanoid, not zombies, real people. And you have to basically look those down and make the decision whether or not to shoot. And of course, I'm not going to give away all the gun sight secrets, but let's just say you better pay close attention. Ultimately, for me, the trip was a fantastic way to get more firearms training in a whole new setting that I'd never been to before. And I wouldn't say that the Gunsight Academy changed my mindset as far as a shooter, but I would say that it helped solidify my mindset. All those different varied experiences really helped me justify, rationalize, and just 100% over and over again, just be positive about, again, my decision to carry a firearm, my decision to train with that firearm, and my decision also to share with others the knowledge, the confidence, and hopefully the skill so that they too can be comfortable with a firearm and realize that this equalizer is something that can make all the difference in the world. For those who are looking for a great training experience, I highly recommend the Gunsight experience at Gunsight Academy in Arizona. Definitely look at their classes and pick something that works for you and your scenario. Until then, stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog. And click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Sanford man shoots man to death following argument, police say. Dateline, Sanford, North Carolina. A Sanford man faces first-degree murder charges after police said he shot and killed a man following an argument on Tuesday. Sanford police said suspect and victim got into an argument around 10 p.m. The argument escalated to the point where police said suspect pulled out a gun and shot victim. Police were called to the 900 block of Lansing Street at 10:22 p.m., where victim was found suffering from at least one gunshot wound. Victim, 37, was pronounced dead at the scene. Suspect, 36, was arrested in Siler City Wednesday afternoon and charged with first-degree murder. He is being held without bond at the Lee County Jail.
So when you said Sanford, my first thought was, oh no, not Florida man again, because we have a Sanford here in Florida. It's actually a suburb of Orlando. And if you know the running joke about Florida man, you know how Florida man gets involved in everything. And so I'm actually kind of relieved that there's a Sanford up in North Carolina as well. It makes me feel not quite as, oh God, not again.
Our running joke down here is all roads lead to Sanford. Because basically, in this half of the state, anywhere you go, there'll be a sign that says this many miles to Sanford. It's like it's a hub or something, and it's not even that big a town, right?
Why have I never heard of it then?
There's nothing there. There's nothing to hear of. It's a small town. There aren't that many big towns in North Carolina. I mean, like the biggest city in North Carolina is Charlotte, and the county that Charlotte's in, Mecklenburg, has about 1 million people in it. The second biggest county is Wake County, that's Raleigh, and it has almost 1 million people in it. And everything else is much smaller than that. So Sanford, by national standards, is a tiny little place.
Huh.
But for some reason, every road in eastern North Carolina leads at some point to Sanford. I don't get it.
All right, so tell me what kind of roads led to these two individuals having a fatal argument.
Suspect, assault and battery, misdemeanor, class 2. Domestic criminal trespass, misdemeanor, class 1. Two counts, misdemeanor breaking and entering, misdemeanor, class 1. Assault on a female, misdemeanor, class A1. Communicating threats, felon out of Georgia, so we don't know what class that is. And indecent liberty with a child, felon class F. And then there's the victim. Operate vehicle without a license, misdemeanor class 2. Resisting officer, misdemeanor class 2. Second degree trespass, misdemeanor class 2. Miscellaneous motor vehicle violation, aid and abet, misdemeanor class 2. Reckless driving, misdemeanor class 1. Operate a vehicle without a license, aid and abet, misdemeanor class 1. Unauthorized use of a motor conveyance, misdemeanor class 1. And two counts of possessed schedule 1, felon class I.
Wow. Well, it actually sounds like the wrong guy got shot. I mean, the victim had a bunch of misdemeanors, and the only thing he had was felony possession. Meanwhile, you've got that jewel of the suspect with indecent liberty with a child. I suspect what that means. I don't know for certain, but yeah, that's bad.
But one thing's for certain. It's not you. It's not me. It's not your average concealed handgun permit holder pulling out a gun and settling his arguments, is it?
No, it's not.
Baron is on assignment and will return soon.
Hey, it's Tony Ray of the Liberty on Point podcast, here to remind you that this show is part of Self Defense Radio Network. You can check out this show and all the other great podcasts over at selfdefenseradio.net.
Main topic, how to have better political conversations. So at the Grassroots North Carolina meeting on Sunday, friend of the show Maria stopped me and said, hey, you know, I've been listening to the podcast. You've been talking a lot about how to talk to people on the other side and how, you know, you need to come together and we need to understand each other. And I saw this TED talk. You got to check it out. Well, I went home and did a Google search and I found something that I thought she was talking about. And then she sends me an email. She says, this is the TED talk. Turns out it was the right one. And we both sat down and listened to it. The story is basically this guy in the TED Talk, he's like, look, conservatives and liberals speak two different languages. They come from different premises, I guess. I mean, they have different motivations. And maybe it's not really a great idea to assume that the person you're talking to has the same motivations as you. Let me give you a little clip.
Liberals and conservatives tend to endorse different values to different degrees. So, for example, we find that liberals tend to endorse values like equality and fairness and care and protection from harm more than conservatives do. And conservatives tend to endorse values like loyalty, patriotism, respect for authority, and moral purity more than liberals do.
Huh. I'm a liberal. Who knew?
I'm not so sure about the things he's saying about conservatives. The loyalty and patriotism, respect for authority, purity and sanctity. I think he's talking about a particular brand of conservatives. But I can tell you, if somebody comes to me and says, well, that's not fair, that's not equal, you're getting absolutely nowhere with me.
I usually try to argue my discussions about equality and fairness from a legal standpoint. You know, it's not legally fair, or you're being hypocritical, or that sort of thing.
Well, I've never noticed that the hypocrite argument works on anybody.
Well, it may not work to convince them. I usually end up using it with showing my work. It's like, well, here's why this is hypocritical, as a way of defeating a particular argument.
Mm-hmm. If somebody ever comes to me and says, hey, Sean, that's not fair, life isn't fair, buddy. That's exactly what I got taught as a child. Life isn't fair. So if you're going to try to tell me, oh, we need to be fair, I'm not going to hear you. That's really what he's trying to say, is that if you make the wrong argument, you know, the argument that appeals to you, to the person who has different values than you or have different motivations than you, you're not going to get anywhere.
You know, it turns out that when we go to persuade somebody on a political issue, we talk like we're speaking into a mirror. We don't persuade so much as we rehearse our own reasons for why we believe some sort of political position.
You know what this reminds me of? This actually reminds me of the five love languages, if you've ever heard of that.
Yes. Yes, in fact, I have.
For our listeners who don't know what that is, I'll keep it very brief. But the idea is that people have five different ways to express their love for another, through words of affirmation or acts of service, receiving gifts or quality time or physical touch. And the idea is that you may feel that your spouse or your lover isn't demonstrating their love for you when actually they're just doing it in a way that you don't understand. So if you're all about the physical touch and your partner is showing their love by doing chores for you, you may not feel loved. And it's that same sort of thing. It's just, you know, political rather than romantic conversation.
Yeah. How many women complain that their husbands don't ever say they love me, but, you know, he's out there loving you by changing the oil in your car or, you know, providing food and shelter and all these other things that in his mind are exactly the way you show that you love somebody. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, why should I buy you flowers when they're going to die? I'm going to make sure your brakes work because that'll keep you alive and your life is more important to me than some dumb flowers.
Exactly. And I think you're right. I think this really is basically the same argument. If somebody's values are equality and fairness, as silly as that sounds to me, because life is not fair, then if you intend to change their mind, then you really should use those values to frame your argument, right?
Yeah.
So a funny thing happened a day or so ago. I was having an argument with a liberal friend of mine.
Gasp!
Yes, I know. But this was actually a friend, not a, you know, an opponent online. Oh, so I was having this argument, and I kept framing what I was saying in terms of morality. And she kept framing what she was saying in terms of that's not fair. And we argued, I swear, via text for about 6 hours over something that we weren't really saying anything different. You know, we weren't disagreeing with the substance of what I had said, merely the way I'd said it. I was saying something that, in her mind, I didn't have the right to say that or to make that judgment about somebody. That wasn't fair. That wasn't equitable or something along those lines. And in my mind, like, you make judgments every day and that was immoral. Or if it had been done this way, it would be immoral. Oh, you can't say that. You don't get to make that decision for people. Back and forth and back and forth. And then at about 6 or 7 o'clock, I'm reading my news and I get this article from Scott Adams, How to Persuade the Other Party. And in the middle of this article, if your aim is to persuade, you have to speak the language of the other. Talking about fairness to a conservative or morality to a liberal fails at the starting gate. The other side just can't hear what you're saying. I copied it, I pasted it into text, and my comment on it was, F you, Scott Adams, F you. Because he had just taken 6 hours of argument and boiled it down to, you are not speaking the same language as the other person. You have just wasted all your time.
Well, that's what you get for arguing on the internet.
Ah, but it was a friend. Wasn't trying to change a political opponent's mind. But what if you are trying to change your political opponent's mind, Aaron?
Well, then you've got to make sure to speak their language. Otherwise, you're just going to waste time. So yeah, you've got to put it in terms they can understand. And so if you are a liberal trying to convince a conservative of something, you don't do it from the standpoint of fairness. You try to put it in terms of morality and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I thought was an interesting way to frame the TED talk is he talks about, well, what movie is playing in our head, which is another thing that Scott Adams does all the time. But what movie is playing in our head when we have these political arguments? And he said, you know what? It's kind of a zombie flick, right? We're fighting to maintain the good and the right, and these other zombies are just trying to kill us. And then he says, well, wait a minute. Let me tell you what they're thinking. They're thinking that in the zombie flick, they're Brad Pitt and we're the zombies. And who's to say they're wrong? Well, at the end of the TED Talk, he wraps it up with this.
Maybe I got carried away before. Maybe it's not a zombie apocalypse movie. Maybe instead it's a buddy cop movie. Just roll with it. Just go with it. Please. You know the kind. There's a white cop and a black cop, or maybe a messy cop and an organized cop. Whatever it is, they don't get along because of this difference. But in the end, when they have to come together and they cooperate, the solidarity that they feel, it's greater because of that gulf that they had to cross.
So maybe it's a buddy cop film. Maybe it's not the zombie apocalypse. Maybe they aren't zombies that just need to get shot in the head so that we can go on about our lives. And hopefully, that's not what they think of us. So, what do we need to do? We need to frame our arguments in ways they understand and see if maybe once we've done that, there's some common ground.
Black folks with guns! That must mean the anti-Trump apocalypse! Or so you might think, based on a recent episode of Vice News. But Tiffany reminds us that the full story can rarely be captured in a 7-minute featurette.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. Till you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
Hey guys, it's Tiffany here, and today I wanted to talk a little bit about Vice News. I don't know if you guys watched this show. It's on HBO. I've never watched it. Wasn't familiar with it until this whole incident came up that I want to discuss today. But I went to their website, and Vice News bills itself as an intrepid group of correspondents that deliver hard-hitting stories from around the world, investigating a broad range of topics from the ongoing battle for LGBTQ rights to medical achievements like discovering a potential cure for blindness to the Syrian refugee crisis. So, you know, it sounds possibly provocative. I continued reading and discovered that it is produced by Bill Maher, and one of the production consultants is Fareed Zakaria from CNN. Now, I happen to like Fareed Zakaria, or at least I did until the whole plagiarism scandal broke out, which is kind of icky. But Bill Maher, I happen to despise. He's just a provocateur with zero scruples about him. So that kind of, you know, that made me skeptical about this show. But I saw on Facebook that one of its recent episodes, I believe this is episode 81 of season 4. It aired on February 15th on HBO, and it was about a group called Armed Empress. Now, Armed Empress is, this is from their website. It says, Armed Empress is a global platform for women of color united around the ideal of self-defense and the protection of their families. So, sounds pretty cool, right? Group about guns, about protection, geared towards women of color. was founded by a young black woman named Ty Shaw, who's from New York and now lives in Atlanta. And I spoke to her a little bit about this episode because they came down to Atlanta, the vice production crew came down to Atlanta and interviewed her and got some footage of one of her meetings. And Ty told me that she was really disappointed about the way Vice portrayed the group. She said that it looked in the show as if they were trying to paint this organization as some kind of rejoinder to the Trump administration when it's not about the election at all. And Ty said that she actually cleared that up for them in no uncertain terms. During her interview, they asked her how she felt about the rise in gun ownership and the rise in membership in minority-focused gun clubs after Trump's election. And she responded that you're missing the point. This has nothing to do with Trump. Black people have been trying to defend themselves for centuries, and Trump didn't spike any newfound interest in that regard. So she pretty much shut down that question. And shocker, the question and the response got edited out of the episode, doesn't appear at all. Again, I haven't seen it. I'm going by what Ty said to me. I will post a link to the final edited version of this segment in the show notes. And I mean, you'll see that the whole point of the segment is to make it appear as though the Black community is literally up in arms as a direct result of Trump's election. Now, let me be clear. I have felt a heightened sense of anxiety that can be traced back to the election, right? That I'm not denying that. But my only point here is that that's not the point of organizations that are geared towards introducing Black people to firearm safety and ownership. I don't want anyone to see this episode of Vice and get the impression that now that Trump's been elected, Black people are sort of assembling in bunkers and, you know, stockpiling weapons and getting ready for the revolution. Like it ain't that, okay? But we'll say more broadly that, you know, these minority-focused gun groups are not about politics. Oftentimes, I have found with the ones that I'm familiar with, they're actually about being apolitical. One of the things that drives them away from the traditional gun groups is the fact that those gun groups have become so politically one-sided. So oftentimes these groups are really just more about spreading the word about personal defense and the real history of firearms use and ownership in this country. I wish we didn't have to have separate groups, honestly, but I do think that they serve a valuable purpose. And that purpose is not to start an anti-Trump war. Instead, the purpose is to open conversation, to broaden the reach of the Second Amendment dialogue, and to broaden people's horizons, quite frankly. And I mean, let's just be honest, if a young Black mother goes to the NRA website, she's going to see Wayne LaPierre, Chris Cox, Donald Trump, another Wayne LaPierre photo, another Donald Trump photo, some country music singer, I hate country music, oh, here's something about Oliver North. Here's a bunch of military folks. I'm not in the military. Oh, hey, here's finally a woman, Dana Lash. But then there's a picture of a suppressor. A lot of folks might say a silencer, quote unquote. But this is stuff that's not really relevant to a lot of people who are new to guns, especially people who don't fit the stereotypical demographic, which includes a lot of Black people and young urban professionals. So they're going to see that and they're going to think, ah, you know, not my circus. Even though there are some really good articles and video episodes on the NRA blog and on NRA TV about the racist history of gun control, they won't get to that because it's kind of buried and it doesn't seem to be prioritized. It's hidden. They go, on the other hand, to the website of a group like Armed Empress, and the very first thing they see is a silhouette of a woman who's not super skinny, who doesn't have long, silky, straight hair, and who happens to be holding an AR-15. And they wonder, okay, maybe there's more to this whole gun thing than I thought. Maybe it's not such a strictly binary duopoly. Maybe there's a place here for me, even though I don't hunt and I don't really care about suppressors or class 3 licenses. And even though I'm not rabidly salivating over Donald Trump, maybe the Second Amendment is for me, even despite all that. That's the goal these affinity groups serve. That's the space they fill. It's not about burning bridges or stoking flames. And it's certainly not about hunkering down in mutually exclusive corners or preparing for some kind of war. It's, again, it's just about broadening horizons. Usually, there's always outliers, of course. And I'm speaking in broad generalizations. I get that. All the usual disclaimers apply. But generally speaking, that's what these groups tend to be about. Now, I went to the Twitter feed for the Vice episode, and of course, there was the predictable comment on Twitter in response to this Vice tweet that said, hey, they wouldn't like it if somebody formed an all-white gun group. Ugh, I hate this argument. Please stop saying this. Oh, everybody would hate it if it was all white. It's a false comparison. Nobody bashes Operation Blazing Sword for being anti-straight. They're not. That's not what it's about. Instead, they're just a group that's meant to be LGBT friendly. And groups like the Armed Empress serve the same purpose for racial minorities. So they're not anti-white. And it doesn't say anywhere that white people can't join. In fact, hell, honestly, I would encourage white people to join some of these groups geared towards minorities. Go join, I dare you. Not only might it give you a platform for spreading some knowledge and defying some myths, but guess what? You just might learn a thing or two yourself. How about that? You can tell members in these groups about those cool articles and vlogs on the NRA website that discuss how gun control started as black people control. And they can tell you about how a years-long history on things like the Central Park Five and birtherism kind of left a lasting bad impression that won't be so easily cured by trotting out Kanye West and Steve Harvey at Trump Tower. But the point is this, we'd all start talking to each other, even despite our differences. At least now you've got two people at the discussion table instead of one. And that connection is often sparked by a single common thread. It might be the only thread that we have in common, but all we need is one, and that's the Second Amendment. It might be something else like motherhood or student debt or, you know, some other common thread. But as long as we've got a common thread, then the conversation can begin. And I find that more often than not, self-preservation, self-defense, protection of family, Second Amendment, that's a really powerful common thread that can serve as a very sturdy foundation for productive dialogue, better understanding, and hey, if we're lucky, maybe even action. But please don't brand these organizations as the equivalent of an all-white group, because they're not. They're meant to be inclusive, not exclusive. They're meant to foster cooperation, not alienation. And that's why I don't appreciate that Vice News completely rebranded the Armed Empress to look like some kind of anti-Trump reactionary uprising, when that's not what they are. They may be a lot of things, including imperfect. They're still a fledgling group trying to get their feet wet, but they're not battening down the hatches for an ultimate Trump versus the left smackdown, or Trump versus black people, or anything like that. It's not that. Did they address the phenomenon of quote-unquote Trump anxiety at the meeting? Yes, they did. Is this their primary impetus for existing? Absolutely not. And that's the beef that I have with the representation from this episode of Vice. Please don't believe the hype, okay? Regardless of whether you're black, white, red, yellow, purple, hot pink, I don't care. Instead of watching shows like Vice News or accepting some other second or third or 15th hand account of what another group of people is all about, go get your information from the horse's mouth. All you folks claiming that black gun groups are planning the revolution, how about you go to a meeting and actually see for yourself? And all you skeptics who think the NRA is just a bunch of racist, country music-loving rednecks asking folks to hold their beer while they plink at tin cans in the backyard, How about you join the NRA and go actually talk to a few NRA members? I dare you. Got two dares going from this segment, so I better stop it there and see if anybody takes me up on it. Till next time, you guys stay safe, keep it centered and even, and don't watch Vice News. I mean, unless you're going to start a Twitter campaign and let them know how totally douchey it was for them to misrepresent this group the way they did. Such asshattery. Anyway, talk to you guys next week.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
So I want to thank Tiffany. Tiffany has an incredibly tough schedule, and she is trying to find just a little bit of time here and there to develop what it is she's going to say and then find the time to record it. And she is having a heck of a time. So you guys could do me a huge favor if you could go to gunblogvarietycast.com and find the little contact tab and send her an email and tell her how much her segment means to you. Keep it salty, Tiffany. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette.
As I mentioned in the introduction, next month I'm visiting Maryland, which doesn't recognize my concealed carry permit. And because of that, I'm not going to be carrying a firearm during my visit. It's a testament to my commitment to the cause that I'm willing to break my rule of never visiting a state that doesn't respect my right to armed self-defense. But this got me thinking about all the rules people need to follow in order to transport pistols between states, and because each state's laws are slightly different, preppers with guns need to be ready for that. Now, the easiest, most convenient method I've found to keep on top of each state's legal hurdles are through smartphone apps. Legal Heat, available from both iTunes and the Google Play Store, is my favorite because it has a very clean, very quick interface that shows me at a glance what the gun laws are in each state. Be they concealed carry, open carry, restricted areas, if signs have legal weight, that kind of thing. And if you're an Android user, I absolutely recommend it. It's only 99 cents. But if you're an Apple user, I can't. Because what used to be a 99-cent app, and still is on Google Play, is now a yearly subscription on iTunes for $2. Now, if you want a more robust app, or if you have an iPhone but don't want to pay for a subscription, I recommend CCW Concealed Carry 50 State. Now, it too is $1.99, but it's a one-time payment instead of a subscription, and it has a lot more information on it, such as a map of which states recognize your permit, if a state has a duty to inform law, a location button which uses your phone's GPS to find shooting ranges, gun stores, and so forth. It's really cool. Both apps have information on how to transport firearms across a restricted state in a vehicle, and this information is important enough that I'm going to repeat it here. It can be reduced to essentially 6 points. 1. You must be traveling from a place where you can lawfully possess the firearm to a place where you can lawfully possess it. 2. It must be unloaded. 3. Ammunition must be stored in a separate container from the firearm. In other words, don't just drop the magazine and put it next to the firearm. You might be okay with keeping the ammunition in the box you bought it, but I wouldn't risk that. I would actually keep the ammunition in an entirely separate and secured container, and more on that later. 4. Both the ammunition and the firearm cannot be readily accessible from the passenger compartment. So, if possible, keep them in the trunk. But if you don't have a trunk, or it's loaded and you can't put anything else in it, 5. Lock the firearm in a hard-sided case and place it as far from you as possible. Now, please note that the center console and the glove compartment do not count as a hard-sided case in this regard. For pistols, I would recommend getting the NV200 NanoVault, which is just a lockable metal box that'll hold a full-size 1911, and it only costs $35 on Amazon, and you get prime shipping with it. For long guns, just get one of those plastic hard cases with the foam and make sure that it's got a hole for padlock and just padlock that sucker together. And 6. Your transport through the state must be continuous and uninterrupted. In other words, don't be a tourist. Now, it's unclear to me if stopping to eat is all right, but I sure wouldn't risk it. I'd get all my stuff at the drive-thru and I'd eat on the road. Now, if you're curious about transporting a firearm in your checked baggage on an airline flight, that's a bit too involved for this segment, so I'm going to refer you to a post I wrote back in 2014 titled Traveling with a Gun, and it's linked in the show notes, and there are lots of good pictures in that post of how I secured my firearm inside my suitcase. Now, also, remember that even if you can't carry a concealed pistol in a state, you may be able to carry a knife. I can carry a knife for protection in Maryland, and so believe me, I will. KnifeUp.com has a list of knife laws by state, which is a good resource, and there's even a knife law app you can get, also $1.99 and also available on iTunes and Google Play, which breaks down knife laws by state and sometimes even by city, because, for example, in Maryland, you've got the rules for the state, and then Baltimore has its separate laws. And finally, just a legal disclaimer here, remember that apps are not considered legal advice, so consult a lawyer if you have any doubts or, God forbid, you have encounters with the police.
Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support. What happens when a bunch of anti-gun nuts get together socially? They indulge their hatred of gun owners in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So Ohio Brady campaign president Rebecca Flowers has started podcasting every week now. This doesn't mean I'll be fisking her every week. See, she calls the show Loaded Live and has turned it into an anti-gun panel show. As you might suspect, it's really light on substance and thick with the hate.
Let the hate flow through you.
Still, I did take the first three Loaded Live shows and managed to get a few interesting clips from them. So let's lead off with their reflections on current Second Amendment legislative actions. First, the Hearing Protection Act.
That's where you let everybody get silencers.
Oh, God, without... I did just see something about that.
Yeah,
wait,
right
no,
now
are
you
they
have
really
to...
protecting people's hearing with that? That's their...
That's the rationale.
Oh, my God.
I know. Isn't that
incredible? There's so many guns these days that I'm just going deaf from the noise. What should we do about that?
Silencers.
Man, they seem pretty glib about permanent hearing damage. Of course, they're not going to think about things like home defense and hunting where you might be firing a gun, but need to have unobstructed hearing. Also, given that none of these people are shooters, they've never had an earplug pop out or broken the seal on an earmuff against a rifle stock or other accidental exposure of the ear to firearm noise. The end result is not only painful, but potentially might lead to lifelong hearing damage. Suppressors are an easy fix for that. And they don't want it because guns. They also had a lot to say on concealed carry reciprocity.
So the goal is to get out there in front of his office, raise awareness, get in the newspapers and say, does this man want you killed? Does this man want people from Vermont and Alaska and Arizona, states that have absolutely no requirements around concealed carry, to just come in with their guns to New Jersey?
This speaker is Dwight Panazzo, who works for the Brady campaign and Gays Against Guns in New Jersey. Yep. A guy from the dangerous state of New Jersey considering people from considerably safer states of Alaska, Vermont, and Arizona as something that will get more people killed. It gets better.
This allows every sociopath from every other jurisdiction in the country who has a concealed carry permit, or from Vermont where you need no concealed carry permit, to come into any other jurisdiction in the country with their concealed weapons.
This is what they think of you. If you carry a firearm for self-defense, you're a sociopath.
Why aren't they co-sponsoring? Because they know that nobody in New Jersey wants concealed carry reciprocity.
Yeah, Dwight, that's why we need to pass this law. This is the modern equivalent to the Civil Rights Act. The Jim Crow South had no right to treat blacks as lesser humans, and we had to drag them kicking and screaming into modern times. At the time of this recording, there are 11 states that don't require a permit to carry. There are 8 states that can blanket refuse to issue a permit to a qualified applicant. The remainder are shall-issue states. States like New Jersey that refuse to issue permits are in the wrong and in the extreme minority, and their stubborn refusal to recognize the U.S. Constitution has forced our hand. So like it or not, there will be concealed carry in New Jersey, and your crime rate will drop because of it. Now on to Madame Defarge, a volunteer for Moms Demand Illegal Mayors for Everytown, a wholly owned subsidiary of Michael Bloomberg Incorporated in the state of Oregon.
There's this one pro-gun extremist in particular who was very outraged by the fact that there were women knitting in the hearing room while, you know, he was railing on against communism and tyranny, and how dare we not devote all of our attention to him. So, you know, then we started bringing our knitting every single damn time because it clearly got under his skin.
Yeah, she allegedly annoyed one dude with her knitting. So now she's going to knit every time. That's a winning strategy if I ever heard one. Now get a load of this.
And I would like to add that the Oregon Capitol building allows concealed carry permit holders to bring their guns into the Capitol building. So this guy was most likely sitting there packing heat with the rest of his buddies packing heat. But God forbid we should be, you know, knitting with bamboo knitting needles.
So get that. They constantly talk about Second Amendment supporters as killers and sociopaths, and every pro-gun law or regulation will get people killed. Yet when this woman encounters a political opponent who she suspects is armed, her reaction is to torment and annoy him? As the old saying goes, if pro-gun people were as violent as anti-gun people say we are, how could there be any anti-gunners? Now onto some discussion that came from an Oregonian challenging a fingerprinting rule, on the grounds that some people are missing fingers.
But then how are you holding the gun if you have no fingers?
Okay, so do a Google search for somebody named Nubs, and you will see him shooting a gun with his toes. I'm not even kidding.
Did you hear that? These progressive paragons of tolerance are now ridiculing people for having a physical disability. In this case, it's Hunter Kale, better known as Nubs, who is a young man who was born with no hands, and is an amazing three-gun shooter. Most people would think not having hands would make shooting impossible, making Hunter's story inspiring to both gunnies and non-gun people alike. Unless you're anti-gun, where you make fun of people for being disabled and liking guns. See, gun owners aren't actually people. Now Dwight is back to talk about a New Jersey politician who actually respects the Second Amendment.
I don't know the man personally, but I do know that he doesn't give a damn about getting people killed. He's got an A or an A-plus rating from the NRA.
Yep, we don't care about getting people killed. Except they seem to have no problem harassing, demeaning, and ridiculing us. I guess we don't care about getting people killed, but we also suck at implementing it. That makes sense. On to a brief discussion on the so-called Charleston loophole.
The shooter who killed 9 people at the Charleston AME church last year should not have been able to buy a gun. He would not have passed his background check. But federal law allows a gun sale to proceed if the background check is not completed within 3 days. And so his background check took longer than 3 days, and he was granted a gun, and he killed 9 people.
First up, I'm not as sure as she is that the Charleston killer's criminal history would have disqualified him. What she misleads us on is that this wasn't just 3 days, but 2 months between when the Charleston killer was first delayed in his next check to when he attacked the church in Charleston. The FBI was never going to respond to that hold. Nobody cared that his purchase was delayed. It sucked that a monster like him was given a gun, but these holds also happen to perfectly innocent people, and the fact that the FBI might not be interested in doing their job is why we wrote the law so that after 3 days, the sale could be completed if there was no response. Now a real gem in the discussion of Supreme Court nominee Judge Gorsuch. Yeah.
And he wrote a whole book on assisted suicide.
He didn't read his book.
If you didn't catch that, Dwight dispenses with all the subtleties.
No, stand, he didn't. Right, he didn't right. take advantage
oh,
of
it. He didn't read his own. I don't think it was a how-to guide.
Yep, he wants a federal judge to kill himself because they disagree politically. And these are the people who call us sociopaths? Psychological projection, anyone? Speaking of psychological projection, this is guest Marty Priest talking about the Obama Social Security gun ban that is about to be legislatively overwritten.
Well, I have a
due process.
I have a serious chronic mental illness that I'm treated for. Mental illness is a medical condition, and people who have mental illnesses that are documented really should have extra help protecting themselves from the bad moments in their lives.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I'm not afraid to say that. And now we want to assist people who have more of those bad moments to arm themselves. I don't get it.
So you have somebody who not only admits to being mentally ill, but is implying that her mental illness might lead her to hurt herself or others if she had a firearm. And she wants the government to step in to protect her. Let's ignore that she likely has a car and a driver's license and can stop by any corner store in America and get some high-test gasoline, lighters, and toxic cleaning chemicals. No, no. Dangerous people can only be dangerous if they have guns. Still, this ban wasn't about mental illness, but senior citizens who are simply electing to get financial help in their retirement. Trust me, many of my immediate family are retired or getting ready to retire. And transitioning to a fixed income life is no joke. And most of them elect to seek outside help with their money to make sure they aren't making a serious mistake.
I got to tell you, first, I thought, oh, they've got a good point. And then I went and I actually read the Obama rule. And right within the rule, there are specific remedies for people to go and seek legal redress so they can get their gun right returned to them. So that was an out and out lie came out on the Gun Talk podcast that I was listening to.
So he thinks it's perfectly fine to disarm people who simply want help managing their Social Security money? So long as there's a long, convoluted path for these people to fight to get their rights back? Is there any other right where it is removed with no due process of law and then requires the person to fight to have those rights restored?
Gun promoters do not value other people's lives. Not the way we do.
They don't. No.
Yep. We don't value human life the way they do. They're right. We don't want laws that get innocent people killed. We don't wish for the death of our political opponents. We don't ridicule people just because they disagree with us, and certainly not because they have a disability. It becomes increasingly clear that these are not healthy or rational people who lobby for the anti-gun side. Is there any wonder why they wouldn't trust us with guns? Once again, anti-gunners never argue in good faith.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Plug of the week, state-level gun rights organizations. So Aaron, if you commit a crime, where will you be tried? State court or federal court?
Well, unless I do something really stupid on federal property, it's going to be state court.
Right, so unless you're taking lobster that are just too small, pretty much every crime you commit is a state crime. And it's state court where you're going to be tried, and it's state law that they're going to use to try you with. So, knowing this, as a gun owner, where should you focus most of your efforts in changing the laws that you have to live with every day?
Gosh, Sean, it's almost like we had this as a main segment a little bit ago. Yeah, we were saying that we should focus our efforts on the state level, locally, and by changing the laws in the state, we could actually change laws on a federal level, because just as an example, if every state in the union decided that they weren't going to prosecute marijuana crimes, eventually the federal government would just say, this is too much effort, fine, we're just going to legalize marijuana, we're not going to deal with it, go away. And it's the same thing with gun rights. And now if you've been paying attention to this podcast, I've been talking about Maryland Shell Issue and Florida Carry, and Sean's been talking about Grassroots North Carolina. And these are all state-level gun rights organizations that we should get involved with. And if you're not in one of those three states, well, guess what? We have a list of all the other state-level gun rights organizations, and you need to join. You need to be a member of them. And Sean, I understand that this list is actually on former co-host Adam's blog.
It is. It's on gunscarstech.com/state-level-organizations, or just go to our show notes and take a look. There's a link. Find your state, find your gun rights group, and join it. Not only should you join it, You should give them money, and you should volunteer and help them out, because like every other organization there is, maybe 5% of the people do 95% of the work. So get involved, get the laws changed in your state, put pressure on your representatives in your state who are your neighbors. These are people who you could go to their house and knock on their door and have dinner with because they are your neighbors and they have to be responsive to you, because if they aren't, they know you're going to vote somebody else in their place. So join the groups, check out the show notes. There'll be a link.
Yeah, so it's not just one plug of the week. It's not even 50 plugs of the week, because there are multiple organizations. California has like three of these. If you're in California, join all of them. So yeah, get involved at the local level. I would pound my fist on the table, but Sean would give me a dirty look for that. So just imagine I'm pounding my fist on the table and I'm saying, join your local state level gun rights organization.
Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that the Gunblog Varietycast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode131.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Varietycast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you. This is a URS production.